This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Where are you? Come back in here. Why don't you come sit in here, Danny? Tell him to sit down. He can join us with this. Well, you have somewhere to be? Danny O'Neill's here, Brock. I don't know if you know.
Danny, by the way, I do know because he's been there every the last 2 weeks.
Danny shows up this time of day. We haven't talked to him in a while, so I figured we'd drag him in here. Maybe he can help us get to the bottom of the big mystery. Brock is in Sacramento, and so you see Luke there, I would assume, right? Luke is working
staying
in
with
Sacramento
Luke.
State.
I'm staying with Uncle Luke and Aunt Dolly. Yes.
Is that awkward after he didn't get the invite on the Big Brother's fishing trip?
What's that even mean?
I mean, what do you mean, what does it mean? Has it been awkward ever since you and Damon went to Alaska together on a Big Brothers fishing trip and you did not even invite Luke?
No, I don't think so. He did bring it up yesterday. He asked a question about the trip, like how rough the waters were. and I said, well, you know, pretty rough for Uncle Damon, but that was about it. So, I mean, I'll ask
him. I was pretty Brad. You wouldn't want to be there. You wouldn't have
you know what?
The waters were pretty rough.
And
I think for our show and for our relationship and for, you know, Luke and I'll ask him today.
I think he should for
I'll
for
get right
your
to I'll cut
sake.
Right to the chase of it. Yeah, Dad was a little bitter. Dad wanted to go, but as it turned out, you know, I even said to Damon, like, day two, do you think Dad could do this? And he's like, no. I mean, it's 10, 12 hours on the water. It can get a little rough. So, but I will ask Luke today, and I will let you know tomorrow if he has any resentment or bitterness.
Here's the thing, Brock.
Hi, Danny.
Hi, Brock. I thought you were here and having some gastrointestinal difficulties, so I went into the bathroom and banged on the door in there and asked if everybody was okay.
Oh, no.
Only to find out it's in Sacramento where that's happening.
Who was in there?
So, not sure. Not sure.
Have you been like watching the door to see who comes out?
No, I'm kind of like Brock when it comes to Luke Heward and his feelings, where I'm just like, yeah, we'll see.
Who are you hoping?
Who knows?
You're hoping it's the intern Cole or something, but there's a decent chance it's John Curley.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that's
I wouldn't
true.
Feel bad at all for a second like that.
Nor
Herman,
should you.
Herman, I would legitimately worry that I'm going to be stuffed into the toilet the next time that I'm in that, in that general vicinity.
Down. Hey, you have a few minutes? You want to hang out with us?
I do. I got about 5 minutes.
Right.
Brock Heward also is a big advocate of birth order. So how he and Damon have dealt with Luke Heward's potential hurt feelings is simply to disregard them because they treat the youngest as 3/4 of a human being.
Is that what's true of Titus?
No, because Titus
is the firstborn boy.
Titus is Brock's favorite, obviously.
Right, yeah. I mean, come on.
Not nice of me to say.
Can you get to the question?
No. I think exploring Brock's views on the family situation is much more fun. Can we stick around for one of our three questions here?
Yes.
Which one do you want? One about the future of sports, all 4 major sports. The one about the Mariners or one about statistics?
I want the one about the future of sports.
All right, so here you go. The question is this. Which pro sports league, of all the major pro sports leagues in this country, which one is in the best shape moving forward from here? Like, which one is in the best position to succeed moving forward, and which one is in the biggest precarious spot?
And Danny,
right
I'll
now?
Give you a second to think about that, because there's so much hand-wringing right now about the NBA. Boogie Cousins, 5 All-Stars to your beloved Golden State Warriors, and there's no competition, and the parity is gone, and there's no – it's just you already know who the champ's going to be, and boy, howdy speaks an NBA voice and everything else. And yet, LeBron's in L.A., yet Boston is going to be unbelievably relevant. Some of the biggest markets are going to have some of the biggest stars, and their ratings continue to climb. The NFL with a CBA that's looming that's going to be a disaster with players that I think want more than ever before and work less than they ever have had to before. Major League Baseball, for all it's got going with Boston and New York being the two best teams going in baseball right now, and some of its biggest stars back in those two most important markets, and the NHL that got new life with a Vegas team that I think shook up the NHL world in many ways. Some of its customs. I think most of the guys that we've talked to enjoyed what Vegas did, jumping on the scene, and Seattle and the best executive in all of sports coming to the Seattle market here in just two short.
Can I ask a question for clarity's sake before we move on? Did I read that Oklahoma City's going to have a $300 million payroll, including a luxury tax?
That's correct.
So I just want to be clear. The Oklahoma City Thunder, a team in the middle of nowhere, is going to be paying 12 or what, 15 guys total on a roster, more money than any baseball team is paying 25 guys?
That's correct.
That's insane.
It's great. You know why?
Is it?
Because they pleaded poverty when it came to extending James Harden. They have the most expensive payroll in the history with luxury tax.
Right? What is a football payroll?
It's certainly
payroll?
Not more than the Premier League. Football payroll is like
180 million? 170
It depends on how you count it.
Okay.
I mean,
roughly.
Cap-wise,
it's
like
under 200 million, right?
Yeah, you're probably paying
baseball,
$200 million
once you get
cash.
Over, there's very few teams that get over 200 million. No one's come close to the 300 million barrier yet. But somehow the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to spend $300 million on a roster that does not have a shot of winning a title.
Does not have a shot of winning a playoff series.
Come on.
No, let's be clear. They didn't win a playoff series last
year.
That
league is broken. You can't tell me otherwise. I don't care how popular it is.
Now, here's the thing
about
that.
That is broken.
Room for growth? I'm not sure how much is there. This is how the NBA has always been. Mm. You think about the franchises, the Celtics, the Lakers, the Spurs. Like, the number of teams that actually win titles in that league is incredibly small. The most parity, for all we talk about football, the most parity is baseball. I mean, the most parity that happens in teams getting into the playoffs, it is. Because the perception is that you have the super teams. Even now we're talking about the super teams again this year. It's not football because of the long-term health concerns. And I think that league, more than any other, has a legitimate crisis in terms of leadership and Goodell and the way that he's piloting that league, that he's actually doing things that his most fervent customers dislike. And I think that that's bad for the long-term trajectory of it. My answer would be either baseball or hockey, and it probably depends on where I am. If I'm talking about in Seattle, I think hockey has the biggest upside. Hockey has the opportunity for the biggest growth. You're going to have a team that comes here. It's a fantastic live product. It's a better live product than it is a television product, which I think is one of the hurdles that it will have if you're talking about truly national appeal in the United States. But
I
would say
weird about that. I hear that argument a lot. I think that's partially true, and I may be in the minority on this. But my feeling on that has always been this: the NHL is a better live product than a TV product. But that's not to say that it's a bad TV product. And the TV product is greatly enhanced by going to a game, understanding what's going on, and then the TV product really is fine. I don't think any sport, maybe golf and tennis, I don't know that any other sport benefited more from HD than they did. Because in HD, hockey looks just fine. You can follow the puck. It's clear enough. I don't buy that whole idea.
Does hockey run into the same issue the NBA does, Mike, with just too many regular season games? Because the TV element of hockey in these playoffs were unbelievable.
Yeah.
You could feel the electricity. Those arenas were so dynamic.
I don't think it's the same. Now, they do have some of that, but those guys don't take nights off the way they do in the NBA. You don't know which eight teams are going to make the playoffs from each division before it starts. I mean, you have to actually play through the season and see what happens.
You had an expansion team play for the Stanley Cup this year. There is more uncertainty in there. Can you become a hockey fan by just watching it on TV?
I think so. I mean, I grew up going to one or two games a year, but generally watching it on TV in standard definition on an old set. I mean, I think so, but you got to have, and I've said this a bunch, one of the most important hires this team makes is their color analyst. You got to have a really, really good television color analyst who can explain the game easily to people that don't really understand it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you, because I've never played the game of hockey, but I grew up watching Derek Sanderson and then later Andy Brickley, who are great, great color commentators, and they taught me the game that otherwise I would have no other way to understand.
Push comes to shove. You say hockey or MLB?
Yeah, Danny,
is your answer.
I'm sorry means I'm going to keep talking on this show.
I think my answer would be hockey or MLB, and primarily with baseball, it comes to the fact that I think there's room for growth there, and it's a more accessible sport. I took my in-laws yesterday to the game there in town this week and with Sharon, and we sat there. We had a great afternoon. I think enjoying a baseball game is something that is very accessible regardless of your level of involvement with the team. It's a fun afternoon. We had a blast, especially when they saw me try to stop the wave.
Yeah, I'm sure you almost succeeded.
No, I didn't. I got washed over. I stood up in anticipation of it, Brock. It was like about three sections away, and I tried to put my hands out like I was going to stop it, like shoving a train like Superman, and I just got bowled over. I got sucked over the falls, and then when it came back, I went Ted Knight from Caddyshack. Heave off! No wave!
Were you putting on a show for your in-laws?
Of course. Why wouldn't I? You think that I'm shy about that?
No, I think
they're like,
I think
oh my gosh, I can't believe that he's, awkward white guy was making a making a big show, a production of things.
By the way, text message is coming in for you, Brock. Hey, did Luke ask where the water's rougher than our current relationship? Because that would be a pretty decent indicator that you've got a problem.
I will promise you, tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., unless something magnificent happens in the Mariners game, I will answer this. If Luke is bitter, I may even video it. If you would like, we'll just have him on the show.
He can just call it.
Here's how
Brock won't let Luke on this show. It's been very clear from day one. Damon gets to come on the show to talk Huskies or wine, and Luke gets to do nothing.
Here's the youngest. Here's how the youngest would let him, you know, if he was really hurt. It would be stuff like, that sure looked like fun. How was the fish?
Boy, that did seem great. Did you bring any of the halibut
down?
How was
Damon? Come to think of it. I may be in some trouble here now that I think about it, because we were out playing a little catch in the front, and Luke FaceTimed Damon last night. Yeah, he FaceTimed him. Damon must have had a few passing times. He was in really good spirits. Yeah, and he had his little egg out there. He's like, oh, I am having a great time. I got friends over.
His little egg?
His barbecue egg.
Oh, the big green egg.
Yeah. There you go.
It's distinctly not little. It has big in the name.
And you know what?
Brock calls everything little. When you're 6'5", like Brock is, everything.
And you know what Luke said to him? He's like, oh, what are you barbecuing? And Damon's like, oh, I got some burgers, halibut. And Luke's like, halibut? Where did he get the halibut?
Oh, dude, you're in trouble. And you didn't catch that sign?
Not really.
That didn't even dawn on you
Boy,
do I wish we had some halibut to grill. That'd be awesome.
Man, any salmon? We don't get great fish here in Sacramento being this far inland. But
I think he's bitter. I think you're right. I think that right there was a clear sign of his bitterness.
Of course he's bitter. You invited your other brother to go on a fishing trip without him.
Of course, Luke was too busy with football camps and everything he had going on.
All the safer for the invitation. You could have given him a non-vite. Yep. You could have given him the unvitation.
The unvite.
Yes.
I'm not going to do that to little brother.
Well,
Danny said he had worse.
Danny said he had 5 minutes. Danny, I'm going to try to
honor
your time.
Danny left. He just left.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Bye, Danny.
I want to try to honor that time. That's why I was interrupting his sorry, too.
I was surprised reading
your email. You're not supposed to say sorry anymore in 2018, by the way. You're supposed to say thank you.
Oh, really?
Instead of saying sorry for interrupting, you'd say, like, oh, thank you for holding your thought.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Instead of saying, sorry, I'm late, you'd say, thank you for waiting for me.
All right, two thoughts. One, today definitely has a distinct feel like we're on vacation, but here doing the show anyway. Show seems to have no rules, no guidelines. We're all over the map. Today feels like we're on vacation, but doing the show, maybe because it's July 5th.
Because Brock literally is.
Yeah, maybe that. Two, I was surprised reading your email on this, Brock, that when you went through the issues of the NFL, you went through their coming quarterback crisis as Big Ben, Brady, Breeze, and Rodgers all leave, but didn't mention the gigantic problem, the fact that it may be true that no one is playing football soon.
Yeah.
I mean, like, have you heard that Malcolm Gladwell podcast yet on Penn State and the concussion thing?
No.
It's really powerful. I mean, he essentially makes the argument, and I know you're a Malcolm Gladwell fan like I am. He essentially makes the argument that football is the modern-day coal mining, that it is just as dangerous. I mean, I don't know the percentages, but just like coal mining back in the day, everyone knew it was awful, but no one was willing to make a move to stop doing it. This is the same thing. Everybody who's looked at it knows that this is inherently brutally dangerous for the participants, but no one is willing to make a change to stop it because it's so popular.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yesterday we were at the park. The girls were getting a little shooting in, and Uncle Luke and I were watching and playing and throwing a little football, and there was another guy there. And he came over to me at one point. He's like, man, your daughters are competitive. That's really fun to watch. And they were getting after it. Macy's throwing the basketball at Haley, and she's like crying. She's mad. She's not beating her and everything else. It was really fun. She was super feisty. Uncle Luke loved that. Loved the little underdog role that Macy was playing. And so the guy and I just started chatting a little bit. He had a little grandson out there. And he's like, yeah, you know, his grandson had a little golf club. He's like, yeah, I'm trying to get my little guy to do more than I did. And I was like, oh, what did you play? Were you a basketball player? He's like, no, I played football. I played at junior college. I played at Cal Berkeley. And I just, I don't want my grandson playing football. Mm. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I want more for him. He's like, I've got three kids. My oldest played. My daughter was a basketball player. My youngest, you know, truth still be told, is finishing up high school. And he's playing football. But I want more for my younger guy. For my grandkids. I would love to see them not play football. And at that moment, right, of truth right there, what do I do? Do I, my whole life has been football.
Right.
It still is. My livelihood is still about the game of football. That's how my dad put food on the table, and Damon and me and Luke. And so at that moment, I'm like, I'm not going to be hypocritical. And I still love the game. I said, well, you know what? I actually am very involved in football. My little brother over here, he's a coach. He's an offense coordinator at Sac State. Three boys, we all played. Had a chance to play, you know, even beyond college. Loved it. I work in the business now. And I think there are still great merit about the game of football. And I think there's so much toughness and so many things that can still be instilled with the game. I get where you're coming from. But I, for one, still love it. If my little guy wants to play, I'm not going to discourage him from doing it. And we had a great conversation for like 20 minutes. He's like, no, it's not that I don't love football and I still love it, but I just want more. And for me, I had nothing else and no other outlets. And you know what? That may be where some of it realistically comes, Salt, is back in the day, it felt like, you know, there just weren't as many outlets for other games and other sports.
And now you got a lot of other options that don't have the same concussion problem. And I think if you kind of follow Gladwell's theory to the end, he's essentially talking about a game that will be played by the poorest people in society who have no other choice.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know about that. I still watch, you know, high schools. I know there are some. I was chatting with a guy the other day, and he said, yeah, high school team doesn't have enough kids to field the team.
Is that true in Texas?
Probably not.
Right. I haven't heard of that becoming true in Texas.
Is it down in Tacoma? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it right in our area here where you're seeing some of those numbers and some of those challenges? Yes. Would I contend that the game is safer and so much safer today than it was 20, 25 years ago when I played? 1,000%.
Yeah. It's tough, though. I mean, you and I were both out when Greg was in last week. Greg Bishop was in to talk about his Tyler Helinski story. But, I mean, you've read it. It's brutal. I mean, it's really, really challenging to read just how bad things got at the very end for him there.
Mm-hmm.
What becomes difficult to tell is how much of that is I don't want to say the norm, but just how prevalent that is. Is that one really incredibly sad story that stands by itself? Or is that increasingly more likely for a kid playing football in this day
and
age?
And is this issue,
we
unfortunately,
don't know.
Yeah, and is this issue, unfortunately, and Olin Kreutz, my buddy, just last week, follow him on Twitter, got in a huge, huge Twitter debate with so many people coming at him, and he was going on the other side.
I'm sure he handles that well when a lot of people come at him.
Dave and Paul Moyer and lots of guys here, Mike, I think, stand up and say, you know what, we're not all vegetables. Right. This thing has become so politicized, unfortunately, like so many of these topics, that, you know, either side wants to take it and run with it from their perspective. And it just crushes dialogue and it crushes actual legit narrative, because they'll take one. Each side will take one side of it and or one story from it and will amplify it and grossly exaggerate it and make it such an enormous, you know, part of their argument that it just doesn't become a healthy conversation, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting when Titus comes to play. You know, that's what I said to him. I got an 8-year-old now. He's not playing. My nephew just the other day on our cruise said, hey, when are you going to let Titus start playing tackle football? And I said, probably junior high. You know, Damon did the same with his son, Sam. That's what my dad felt like with Damon and I, that we weren't going to do it until junior high. Luke had a little more rage, so he played in fifth grade and started to tackle football there.
And this is the guy you decide not to invite on your fishing trip.
Good guy to mess with.
Real smart, buddy.
Rage guy.
Mess with the rage brother. Really, really bright.
Yeah, so answer that question, by the way, way back when 15 minutes ago. Of the four sports leagues, which one do you feel like? Do you feel like there's one that stands out from the rest of being in the best shape moving forward?
It's probably stupid soccer.
Okay. Mike says with gusto.
It's one of the four options.
Look, if it ever becomes important enough, I'll quit the business. But it is. It sure seems like, just to spite me, it'll be the one that makes it.
I don't know. I think baseball is in pretty good shape. I don't know if I would have said that 2 or 3 years ago.
It's strange.
It's got some of its issues.
Are you playing some of circumstance because the Mariners are good right now?
Yes, but it's also got a good commissioner, and I think that's part. I mean, Manfred seems like he knows what's going on. Basketball's got a commissioner that seems like he knows what's going on. And unfortunately for hockey and for football, they've got guys at the top who are problematic. And that's being very, very generous to both Goodell and to Bettman, who are horrible at their jobs. So, I think both are stewarding their leagues poorly, and that is a bad sign for your league.
And I am probably a little prisoner of the moment, Howdy, that we're seeing 38,000 and 40,000 and some unbelievable environments in this home field and a team that's, you know, playing playoff baseball. So, yeah, I probably am a little prisoner to that emotion.
But you've also seen in the last few years a bunch of these teams get a shot at having that excitement in their building.
Yes.
You saw Cleveland go to another World Series. You saw Pittsburgh finally have some excitement with a few playoff series and an unbelievable environment there after years and years. Kansas City to two straight World Series and winning one. It hasn't just been the Cardinals, Yankees, and Red Sox every single year. You've actually seen some other teams get a shot at that buzz in their stadium. And oh, by the way, the Dodgers, Yankees, and Red Sox are all good with major star power, which is really good for the
and
game.
Yet, of all those leagues, that's the one league where they have the most attendance issues on a game-to-game basis.
Because it doesn't fit society in the same way that basketball does. The basketball one's funny for me, though, because I get the sense people are talking about basketball more than they're watching it. Like, I know the ratings are up a little bit, but they're not, like, skyrocketed. They're nowhere close to the NBA, or to the NFL, rather. The NBA's not putting up gaga ratings. They're doing great social media work, and everybody's talking about it. And
buying their merchandise.
NBA Twitter is off. Sure, but are they doing well with people watching and caring about their teams?
They're doing well with advertisers, and that's why those things are important.
Yes, and they have made it a 12-month sport.
Yes.
It is what they have done. They looked at it, and Adam Silver in some of his brilliance, and not just his ego like David Stern had, I think some of his brilliance, said, you know what? We can do that. You know what? We can do that. What those guys are doing over there, that gorilla that is dominating this market and eating up so much revenue in the NFL, making it a 12-month deal, we can do the same. And we can make our combine legitimate, and we can make our draft legitimate, and we can make our summer league ball legitimate, and our season stretches on so much longer than theirs anyway, and we can make our preseason legitimate, and then we'll make our regular season, and then we'll make our playoffs the biggest thing ever, and we're going to just magnify our superstars and make them bigger than life.
Yeah.
And you know what? We can do this for 12 months. College football can't. College football goes dormant. As much as it bothers me, for 6 months, it goes completely and totally dormant, like the grass down in Georgia does in the winter. It is just done. Baseball goes dormant largely after October, November, December. They try to with the winter meetings, but it doesn't crank up. It has no draft, has no combine. It goes largely dormant until the spring. The NHL goes fairly dormant. The NBA said, you know what?
Yeah.
We can do that.
Smart,
we can do what the NFL can do.
You're right about all that. All right, you want a weird piece of news? This one will surprise you. The Seattle Mariners have released, any guesses? Left-hander Ariel Miranda.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, released, and according to Ryan Divish, so that he can sign with a team in Japan. A little surprised by him. I mean, that's a guy who, didn't he like lead their lead team in wins last
year? He had the
year?
Only complete game last year for the Mariners,
yeah, he was arguably their most consistent pitcher last year, and has not had a good year. He's been sort of in and out of the lineup in Tacoma, and he has now been released, apparently, so that he can sign with a team in Japan. So, I'm going to say goodbye to Ariel Miranda. We hardly
know
him.
That is a little strange.
Yeah, just sort of.
Who would have guessed that at the end of last season?
Jeez.
And you would have said, hey, going into this year, who do you think is number one going to be one of the best pitchers for the Mariners, Wade LeBlanc? And number two, who do you think is going to be released from the Mariners organization, Ariel Miranda?
Really, really strange. And by the way, kudos to Wade LeBlanc. How about that? Guy finally gets paid a little bit. He's been chugging around for, maybe this will work out for Miranda, just like it did for LeBlanc. And he'll come back from Japan, and he'll eventually get himself a long-term deal.
You know, that's probably why he did this. He saw the way LeBlanc's deal and was like, you know what? He's the fifth or sixth guy in the staff, so that's not going to be me. So what am I doing?
I guess. I don't know. Miranda seems like he appreciates the bright lights. That's been my take on it. Like, he's pitched much better at the pro level, at the major league level, than he has in AAA or in the minors. Like, he just seems like a guy who appreciates the
It really light. Surprises me that would happen before you would move him into a reliever role.
Yeah.
That if there was a guy that you looked at whose skill set of throwing 95 plus as a starter, right, as a starter, that if you just contained him to an inning or two,
yeah,
that
limit some of his pitches, maybe absolutely,
yes.
And get rid of either his splitter
pitches.
Or his change.
That's right. Two pitches.
I think the problem he has is that he's just not a real lefty specialist guy. He seems to struggle against lefties. Almost been better against righties.
One of the things that probably we're underestimating is that Jose Lopez probably recruited him out
probably.
There. Like, maybe they're like really good buds.
And
he was
Vladimir
like, you know
Valentin.
What? I'm LeBron. You come out here, be on my team, make a super team.
Haven't thought about
that squishy watermelon lemonade made you just feisty this morning. I like it.
All right. Coming up here at 9 o'clock, we'll talk some more Mariners, talk about all these things with Shannon Dreyer, who joins us just past 9. Before we do it, though, and coming up next, the Seahawks have lost six Pro Bowlers this offseason. Which one matters most? It's next on Brock and Salt.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Hope you guys are having a good day after the 4th. If you're working today, like us, I'm sorry. Most people at the barbecue I was at yesterday said they were working today, so hopefully you're not alone. This hour brought to you, of course, by Precor Home Fitness. Shannon Dreyer, join us, talk some M's coming up in a half hour. Brock is in Sacramento, but with us, which is great, mostly because Luke kicked him out of the house where he's staying.
How do I sound down in Sac down? Sound pretty good?
I would say sound...
You sound really good.
Yeah,
incredibly.
Oh, really? Better than when you're here, I would say.
Oh good.
Very impressive.
Interesting.
Yeah,
awesome.
Very impressive. Hey, so the Seahawks are losing six guys, right? I mean, I'm going to throw Earl into that list, at least for the sake of this conversation. You got Cam and Earl, Sherm, so the three members of the Legion of Boom, two guys up front, Bennett and Averill, and then Jimmy Graham. Six guys who have all made Pro Bowls in their career, all depart Seattle this offseason. Rank them. It's crazy, right?
It's nuts.
And then sometimes we have the gall to sit around talking like this is going to be a good team this year. And I think that they are.
Yes.
But when I say this out loud, I feel like a buffoon, honestly. Like, yeah, what am I talking about?
The sports show here, Carmichael Dave in the morning, and their
love
producers. Oh, really funny. Baby Graz, by the way.
Could
be Graz's little brother.
People don't know this, but Carmichael Dave in Sacramento in the morning is my favorite morning show hosts in the country.
Yeah, he's a funny dude. But I was just chatting with them. They're like, so how's Seattle taking that Cam news? I'm like, well, you know, on the heels of the Sherm and Earl. And they're like, yeah, quite an offseason for you guys. Yes. Yeah, it is nuts. You're right. I'm sorry to interrupt you in your train of thought there.
It's a lot.
Because we haven't even hardly said this out loud for the last 4 months. Oh, yeah, they just lost six Pro Bowlers. They'll be fine. They're going to win 9 games or 10
games. They're
going to
be better.
Right.
But the thing is, they weren't all Pro Bowlers last year, and they didn't all play like it. And so, I don't know. It's a little bit more complicated than just saying out loud they lost six Pro Bowlers. But of the six, rank them in terms of how important they are going to be to lose. From most irreplaceable to most replaceable.
Yeah, I think Cam's the most irreplaceable.
Really?
Yeah, you and I see this one a little bit different. You and I, by the way, we could probably start on the other side of
We both agree. Forget Jimmy Graham. Nobody cares. Go away, Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, I actually had a great chat with Jimmy Zorn about this the other day at the Special Olympics. He's like, man, have you noticed? Did you get out there and watch any of the mini camps? I said, yeah, I did. He goes, do you notice all that strong side run game? Like, it's been totally non-existent. Their inability to run to the strong side has been non-existent here for a number of years. And he was like, man, I love their commitment to getting better blocking tight ends and Dixon and Will Disley. Did you notice he actually had fullbacks too? So, you know, all of that is, I think, a huge positive in the absence of, for you and I, number six on this list in being Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, and it may hurt them in the red zone a little bit, but I think that there are other different things they can do. And I'm hoping that what they miss out on in being able to throw fades and the like to Jimmy Graham in the red zone will be, they'll be able to run the ball in some of those spots, or Doug Baldwin with his quick release, and that they'll find some other ways, or actually having a real offensive coordinator who can scheme a play to get somebody open, that they'll have some different ways of scoring in the goal line, and we won't miss Jimmy Graham. That's my
assumption. And it's interesting, looking at your list of mine, 2, 3, and 4, you and I are basically the same.
Yeah, and by the way, you could basically I could have taken the other five and rearranged them and still been okay with my order, if that makes sense. I think they're all reasonably the same. But I would say that it's either Cam or Sherm would be fifth for me, fourth and fifth.
Cam?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they've basically been playing they played without him a lot of last year.
So that's going to be your argument.
Yeah, that they've always sort of been without
games last year.
Yeah.
And you got a taste of it and you didn't miss them that much.
Right.
I think over the course of the season, over the long haul, and over the identity of what you try to do defensively, the loss of Cam Chancellor is the biggest.
Mm.
That just from both his leadership standpoint, which we documented and talked about an awful lot this week and the end of last week when news came out, and then on top of that, just his mere physical presence. That if you're going to play this scheme and you're going to walk a strong safety up and play him around the line of scrimmage, which they are going to be committed to do, and you're going to try to look like a man zone team, and you're going to get back to the very essence and the principles of Pete Carroll's defense, and Ken Norton's going to play that out fundamentally and functionally and everything else, Mike, you've got to have a guy that is just a thumper at that position, a Taylor Mays at that position, a guy that comes up for what they had at USC and what you have had here with Cam Chancellor for so many years.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I see that on the roster.
Yeah, I don't know that they have that on the roster right now, but I think you can survive without that thing. That, to me, is a bonus. You know what you can't survive without? A pass rush. You know who they miss the most of all these guys? Cliff Avril. Guy coming off the edge who you know is going to affect the passing game all the time. I'd put Bennett there, except the Bennett thing, like, I could have put Michael Bennett there, but it's just so wrapped up in all the other garbage that goes with Michael Bennett that ultimately Avril became my...
Yeah.
He's sort of what I'm using to talk about the thing they're now missing most, which is a pass rush.
But they lost Avril, back to your kind of argument here, for the way you structured it. They lost him early in the season. Mm-hmm. How many times last year were you saying, oh my gosh, where is the pass rush? I mean, Deion Jordan had 4 sacks and 65 snaps.
I think we often were wondering where the pass rush
is. Frank Clark had, 8.5, 9 sacks last year. But, I mean, were we lamenting the loss over and over again, week in and week out, of the loss of Cliff Avril last year?
Yeah. I found myself thinking about it. I don't know whether I was lamenting it, but I wasn't lamenting the loss of Cam Chancellor either. I mean, ultimately, nor was I lamenting the loss of Richard Sherman. I thought they filled in really, really nicely for him.
Yeah, I think Shaquem is a nice fill-in for Richard. I think Shaquem can continue to grow in that role. Is he going to be Sherm? Is he going to play the ball the way Sherm did early in his career with interception after interception, the top interception guy for 3+ years in the league? That's the step that Shaquem has to take. I don't think he can be at Sherm's level that way, taking the ball away. From a physical presence, from a not backing down, from taking on the best receivers and playing in one-on-one situations, I think he'll be more than willing to take that on. Mm. Pass rush, you're right. I mean, Deion Jordan is going to have to fill some pretty big snaps in shoes, and Cliff Avril and others. But, man, they have shown through the years, whether it's Chris Clemens, whether it was Cliff Avril and trading for him, whether it was Michael Bennett, they have shown through the years the ability to cultivate and build some depth at that spot. And they've not shown for years the ability to have anybody that looks anything like Cam Chancellor strong.
Now, both of us had Earl Thomas at number 2. Just to quickly give the list, I went Avril, Earl, Bennett, Sherm, Cam, Jimmy Graham.
And I went Cam, Earl, Sherm, Bennett, Avril, Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think 3 through 5 for me, we had the same guys 3 through 5. You could probably put those in any particular order.
No, we didn't, because I had Avril first and you had him 5th.
Oh, excuse me, 2 through 4. You and I had the same guys. So you can kind of mix some of those up.
Yeah.
Earl clearly is 2nd on both of our lists, and I feel pretty good about that. I'll put him there because, once again, from an irreplaceable standpoint, what he does sideline to sideline, how hard he played the game, his willingness to come up and just saw people in half really hard attributes to find. You can find little guys that can run, and you can find some willing free safeties to come up and hit, but the ability to do both.
What's interesting is if we were doing a system where, you assign points to each vote and then at the end took an average, the average would be that Earl is the most irreplaceable person on this team, right? Yeah. I mean, if I think that it's Avril, you think it's Cam, but we each have the other guy ranked 5th, and then we both have Earl 2nd, then actually the most irreplaceable person on the team is Earl Thomas, who, coincidentally, doesn't need to be replaced. I mean, you could decide that you don't want to replace Earl Thomas, give him a long-term deal, and just forget about all this.
And by the way, underneath the magnifying glass is going to become Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? You can't say, well, we didn't think about this and we didn't project this. Yes, you did. You took Delano in the 3rd round, the highest of any safety that you have ever had. You took him in the 3rd round, and you took Tedrick in the 4th round.
And then you signed
Bradley McDougal twice. You signed him to a 1-year deal, and you liked him enough that he was your first free agent signing that next offseason. So those are guys that you have evaluated, that you have projected to fill in an NFL that you have to continue to have young depth that grows and become young stars, just like Cam and just like Sherm and just like KJ and just like those guys did as 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th rounders. Well, now this is your time, Delano, and it's your time, Tedrick, and it's your time, Bradley. Those 3 guys to fill 2 pretty significant spots.
Text messages coming in as well, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Let's see. Nailed it, Mike. We are going to see how bad Bevel was. Yes, I agree. We'll finally get a chance to see all of that this year. I can't wait. Mental exercise. Yes, losing 6 Pro Bowlers, but how many future Pro Bowlers are on this roster? 2013 had these futures, too. How many future Pro Bowlers are on this roster right now?
Frank Clark's a future Pro Bowler. Tyler Lockett has been there. I think he's can continue. Even as a wide receiver, I think he could grow into a future Pro Bowler. And Shaquem, I think Griffin can be a future Pro Bowler.
Okay.
So I think there's 2 or 3 there that can grow into that.
There's just one. I know I bring this up all the time, but the one guy that just drives me is Jaron Reed.
Yeah.
Why isn't Jaron Reed on this list? Why aren't we talking all the time about how Jaron Reed is a dominant presence? I know he hasn't been one, but it drives me crazy that he hasn't. And for whatever reason, that just gets sort of swept under the rug.
That's the reason he fell from the first to the second.
But when he was drafted, all I heard over and over again was this guy is a monster. First round talent. He's going to dominate. They got to steal the best pick in the draft, this and that. And he's not a bad player, but I feel like I never noticed Jaren Reed, and I really, really want to.
Yep. You sure noticed Frank Clark as a second-round guy wasn't supposed to be a second-round guy.
I noticed Nas Jones last year as a third-rounder, and he sure showed up and balled out last year. I would like to, at the very least, notice Jaren Reed as much as I noticed Nas Jones. Is that too much to ask for?
Nope, not at all.
Good. That's what I asked for. All right, Shannon Dreher joins us in about 20 minutes. Get back to some Mariner baseball conversation. Before we do it, 3 intentional walks in 2 games. What kind of news is that? It's coming up. Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, we continue on here. Hope you guys are having a good morning. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle on that old 710 Sports app as well. Great place to listen to our show. We'll talk to Shannon Dreher coming up here in about 15, 20 minutes right after the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners signed Wade LeBlanc to a 1-year extension that has team options through 2022.
Yeah, I think this is great news. I'm going to put it in that column. It's been great that Wade's had a breakthrough career year. He has been phenomenal in his double-digit starts for the Mariners this season and been a big reason why they, as a rotation, have been one of the best in baseball, or at least one of the most consistent with their 5 guys spinning it. But great news that he gets a little bit of security. If he continues to pitch this way, he'll continue to get paid pretty well. But if he doesn't, great news that the Mariners have tremendous flexibility in the deal, too. That's a true win-win.
Yeah, I would agree on all of those fronts. It's a really nice story what's happened with Wade LeBlanc this year. By all accounts, a really good dude. I think he's Dave Wyman's favorite baseball player. Like, those guys just had an immediate rapport, and when he's been on with Danny David Moore in the afternoon, it's been just like a weird match made in heaven between him and Wyman. So, good news for him. He finally gets a little stability in his life. He knows where he's going to be. And good news for the Mariners. If LeBlanc turns back into a pumpkin, they can move on from this at very little risk. So, he'll make a little money if he's good. He won't if he's not. That's a perfect deal for both sides.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners have intentionally walked Mike Trout 3 times in 2 games.
You know, I generally like the idea of walking Trout, so I will say for the most part this is good news. But we talked about it earlier. I didn't agree with it at all in the 8th inning on Tuesday night. I didn't think that was a time to walk him. That brought the winning or the go-ahead run to the plate, put Trout on as the tying run on base. In my view, if he hits a home run there, he ties it up, and it's the 8th inning. You still have 2 innings against their lousy pen to go ahead and try to win the game. I don't think I walk him there, and especially because they did the opposite, and then Scott defended his decision just about a month ago. So, yeah I didn't like that, and I'd be really interested in hearing Scott's answer on it. I'm sure there's a good reason. Again, I don't think managers do things willy-nilly, and I think Scott's a really smart dude who's really managed a good season. But that doesn't prevent me from disagreeing with a move, and I definitely disagree. I kind of disagreed with all that. I would much rather see Pazos as their 8th inning guy than Colomé, and I would not have walked him in that spot. It worked out as Upton hit a ball that went about, what, 5 feet from going out of the park?
Yeah, it went 400, not 410.
Well,
yeah.
It needed to go 410, so it worked out, but jeesh. Kind of a lucky break.
Yeah, I'm going to say largely good news. And I would be fascinated to hear on all 3 of those occasions the backing and the reasoning for it. I think some of it is the delta between Mike Trout and both Upton and Pujols behind him and the comfort you have that if you make good pitches, you can get those guys out. Versus Mike Trout, that even if you make a good pitch, if it's down or if it's away, or as we saw in the last homestand where he hit everything imaginable against you and had such a comfort level. So I'm going to say largely that is good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
If you were Mike Socha and not like essentially a corpse just sitting in the dugout during the game, would you put somebody else other than Upton behind Trout? Like, why isn't either Andrelton Simmons or Valbuena hitting behind Trout?
Who respects Valbuena now.
I do. The guy hits. I don't like the guy. I think he's a jerk, but geez, he hits. Why wouldn't you put either Andrelton Simmons or Valbuena right behind Mike Trout and say, all right, if you're going to walk him every time, then you're going to have to deal with this guy.
Yeah, I think it would be Upton's home run. Was he a 15 or 16 home run?
He's got 17 now. Yeah. He's got a 785 OPS.
I don't know.
That's why.
Maybe our view of it is clouded, but geez, I think that Valbuena is much better hitter when I watch him over the last few years than Upton.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Ariel Miranda was released by the Mariners so he could pursue opportunities in Japan.
I'm going to say largely no news, but as we talked about just 10 minutes ago, it's a little surprise he was not moved to the bullpen first. He just always struck me as a guy, and we talked about it in the past, that I think he even came out of the pen as a long-inning guy, but when you talk about a two-pitch arsenal, that if he just lived on two pitches and a fastball that already lived 95-plus as a starter, could live 97-plus from the left side with either one of the other pitches to really focus on, he just didn't have the repertoire to be a starter, but a little surprise, largely no news.
It's funny. I actually disagree with that. I think he kind of does have the repertoire to be a starter. Guy throws four pitches, but they're an odd four pitches. He's a lefty who throws a fastball, a curveball, and then both a changeup and a splitter. It's a really strange. First of all, most lefties don't throw splitters. And if you do, why would you throw a splitter and a change, which are essentially the same pitch from a lefty?
I disagree with that. None of those are plus pitches. None of those have been consistent as a starter. Why he's been in multiple organizations is now going to Japan. So why not try to make the most out of just one of those? And as odd as it is a splitter, make that with your fastball.
Right.
Just live on just two of them and focus on two of them. Mm. But instead, he's going to go the way LeBlanc route and head to Japan.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Joey Chestnut ate a world record 74 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes.
So gross. Bad news. Everything about this thing is disgusting.
So awful, awful
so
news.
Nasty. You know who hates this? It's Peter King. Have you seen his take on this? That, like, it's the height of American gluttony and that they should donate those hot dogs to people that are, in need or hungry or whatever.
Great news. He set a new world record.
Because you hate hungry people.
Have you listened to Joey Chestnut? With Golic and Wingo.
He's on the cut sheet, but Mike just hasn't been playing all the same.
Both preceding and I'll tell you, the announcer for that deal is one of the best at his job. That guy is phenomenal.
I legitimately looked at the cut sheet like, he is? That's not
we have like five cuts from Joey Chestnut talking about powering through the 66th hot dog. That was when he kind of peaked and then he got through that.
Do you know how much weight he gains? He starts at 215.
I saw he ate 22,000 calories.
Do you know how much weight he weighs himself pre and post? He does a cleanse for the 2 days prior. He only drinks Melissa's lemonade watermelon tea beforehand. Do you know, he weighs about 215 going in. When he steps on the scale after that contest, do you know how much weight he gains?
How much?
Somewhere between 20 and 25 pounds.
That is revolting. That is so
completely sick.
Unbelievably disgusting. Why did you tell me that?
I don't know.
That is wretched, rancid, and disgusting. Ugh. All right, Shannon Dreyer is going to join us coming up in a few minutes. We'll talk about something better than Joey Chestnut and his gross hot dog eating. It's coming up. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk.